free. Okay. All right, so we're going to go ahead and start here just because it's always good to start on time. If people come in later, that's fine. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Julie Lopez, and I have been homeschooling for 23 years. I have my oldest children. I was going to show you pictures, but I don't dare move anything because we've had every time I try and change the thing, it messes me up. So, but my oldest two are married. They live down in Provo now, and I have a son who is in law school at BYU on a scholarship, and another one who my daughter has a grandbaby, and is expecting another one. So I'm going to have three grandbabies because my son's having one. So I tell you all of this to let you know that, first of all, and we're going to come to this later on, but this is not to brag because this is not me. This is my children, and they are amazing, and they were sent that way, you know. So, but the fact is that homeschooling can work, and I want you to know that. And it's a wonderful, amazing thing. And some days, even when you think it can't, just remember, it can work, because like, we all have those days, right? Today's we're talking about homeschooling or shadow mentoring in the teen world, in the teen years. And there's, so just to kind of give a shout out to why I would even say yes to doing this kind of stressful thing, it's because I have been to a lot of homeschool conferences over the 23 years I've been homeschooling, and I have always come home with just certain takeaways that have changed the way I do things and, you know, the things that happen in my life. And one time I was at a meeting and I was not presenting. Someone else was. And they said, they held up this piece of paper and they said, someone put this together and it changed the way that I do things. And it had been me. And I was like, yes. It was just so exciting to make a difference. And isn't that why we homeschool, right? Because we want to make that difference. And so what I'm hoping is that the reason I say that is because I want you to recognize that all of the stuff on here, if you recognize it, you probably do, right? Like from somewhere else. Yes, you probably do. Because a lot of my homeschooling, and I'm sure yours, is from, and it's not plagiarizing when we share it freely, right? It's from those ideas that we grab from other people, and we take what works and we don't use what doesn't work, and we come up with our own brand of beautiful. And so that's what I'm hoping that we can do today. So this next slide is actually very much like that. This is a bunch of information. I have been studying mentoring for a very long time because I have mentored my own kids, but I've been a part of a co-op here in town and taught the high school age group for about 11 years now. And so I've mentored there. And then I also have started a homeschooling drop-off program for older youth, and I mentor there. If you are interested in anything like that, instead of asking me, you can ask me afterwards, or there's things on the back that you can look at. But I just kind of wanted to go over a few, because shadow mentoring is something that I kind of came up with from these other ideas. So accountability mentors, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's someone who is going to check in with you. And it can be monthly, it could be weekly, but they help you set goals, and then they check in with you to make sure that you've completed those goals. And you've got peer or soul mentors, and those are people that are usually close to your same age, although I've had some peer mentors that have, my mother-in-law, I would say, is one of my peer mentors. And she's significantly older than I am, but our souls connect. Aspirational mentors. This is what a lot of people think of when they think of mentoring. And it's why it is so, like, overwhelming sometimes to think about. Because aspirational mentors are people like Mother Teresa. They're people like Ben Carson. They're the people we want to be when we grow up, right? They're who we want to become like. And I would say that as a shadow mentor, we're going to talk about this later, but one of the things is you don't have to be the aspirational mentor. You connect them, right? That's your job. You help them find aspirational mentors through books, through other things, but you don't, that kind of burden of trying to be that crazy, amazing person is taken off your shoulders a little bit. There's practical mentors. Those are people like your violin teacher or your coach or your dance teacher. And they teach you practical skills, but they also are going to be encouraging coping mentors. A lot of times this is parents. It's the person that they turn to at 1:30 a.m. when they're crying because their boyfriend broke up with them or whatever. It's the person who holds them and helps them. And then there's mission mentors. And those mission mentors are people who have done what you want to do. So they're very specific to, and I think that's part of why homeschool conferences are great, is because we're able to look and to find people who are maybe a little bit further along in the journey and who we can kind of follow, maybe not exactly, but they can at least say, hey, I did that, don't do that. That's not the right thing to do. Or even, so it's not aspirational, it's just somebody who's a little further along in the journey and who can help you out there. So today, though, we're going to talk about shadow mentors. And shadow mentoring is a little bit different than the other ones. It includes some of, or it can include, some of the other things like accountability. But it doesn't always have to. It's very, very dependent upon the child. And when you're doing as a shadow mentor, as you can see here, the biggest portion is listening. And there's I want to tell you something that, who here has ever raised butterflies? You guys ever raised butterflies, had them turn into their little chrysalis, and then they, right? And it's an amazing thing. They go from being a caterpillar, and then all of a sudden, boom, comes out this completely different creature. And I don't know how old all of you guys are, but I'm older, as you can tell from I have a grandchild. And so when I was in school, we were taught that the butterflies would make this chrysalis, then they would dissolve into this gooey thing, and then they would just kind of come out as a butterfly. And that's actually, they're finding, there's been some relatively new to me at least, discoveries, so you guys might already know this, that that's not actually the case. So caterpillars in their caterpillar form already have little tiny cell bases that are going to be antennas. They're called imaginal discs, the wings and the legs. And this, I had to show you this because I think it's so cool. So in a caterpillar, the wings are already there. They have little wing buds if you look closely. They're inside. So this is the caterpillar that's been cut open. And you can see right in here, the little tiny wing that's inside of that caterpillar. And here it is blown up so you can see it a little better. So what I would like to propose is that our children, when you're looking at them saying, how is this caterpillar going to turn into this butterfly? And how in the heck am I going to teach them how to make these wings and all of that? The wings are already there. So we just have to be we just have to provide them with the nutrients and the, you know, and the help to be able to grow and so that they can turn into the butterflies. So my son, my fourth son, he is a jokester and he tells his siblings all the time, because most of us wear glasses, and he tells them, he says, look, I'm the only one that mom gave perfect eyes to because mom loves me best. And he'll just say things like that all the time. And I'm like, well, thank you. I did make you beautiful eyes, but I made them all beautiful eyes. And I joke about that. But the truth is, if we really think about it, I didn't make those eyes, did I? Okay. Can you imagine, picture yourself back to when you were pregnant. Some of you, it wasn't very long ago. Remember when you were pregnant, and imagine now with me that every morning you wake up and you have to like really concentrate and think about which stomach cells are going to go where so you can have the right lining in their stomach. And you have to like make sure that the iris of the eye is in front of the lens. And can you imagine if that's how Heavenly Father had done it? Like that. Seriously, there's a reason that the instructions are already there. And so I just find it interesting to me that even as the kid grows bigger, like, as a child, is when you're pregnant, this is, the placenta is a teamwork thing. The mom makes this side, okay, and the baby makes this side, and the baby's cells make this side. And the baby's blood does not ever go into the mother's system, and the mother's blood does not ever go into the baby's system. We are not in charge of our children. We are there. The mother's blood comes and it does several things. It brings the oxygen. It brings the nutrients that they need to survive. And then it also takes out the waste. Sound familiar? Right? That's what we do. We do this over and over again, even as they grow older. But the baby cells, they're the ones that replicate, and they do what they were meant to do without any other interference from us. So if we can provide that safe place to grow, that's what they need from us. What our kids need is they need a safe place, they need nutrients, they need oxygen, and sometimes they need a little help cleaning up after themselves. So, this is just a quote that I found that I thought was super applicable to all of this. It says, he allowed himself to be swayed by his conviction that human beings are not born once and for all on the day their mothers give birth to them, but that life obliges them over and over again to give birth to themselves. And that's what we're teaching our kids to do. I want to read really fast. This is, let me get her name really fast, Rosemary Wixom. And she talks about how listening is just as important to our kids, is just as important as speaking. And Jeffrey R. Holland said, if we listen with love, we won't need to wonder what to say. It will be given to us by the Spirit. So did you catch that? If we listen with love. So the very, very, and I know you guys all love your kids, but they need to feel and understand, they need to feel that love. And so, and sometimes we get frustrated with our kids. Sometimes our kids haven't, like, for 3 days, they haven't showered and you've been telling them to every day or, you know, whatever it is. And so they need to feel that love regardless. So what I found over the years of mentoring is that if you will start by just talking to them. And just like you would be their friend, right? Like I know we talk about being a parent, not a friend, but I think you can be both. And so these questions are just ideas, but just talk to them and interact with them and then listen to what they have to say. And a lot of times, this reminds me of, so Theodore Roosevelt, he's often credited with the quote, nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. And I know you guys have probably already heard that, but I think it's important for us to remember. And so as we are listening, so through all of these, what you're mostly going to see is questions. She continues, she said, when we listen, we see into the hearts of those around us. So Heavenly Father has plans for each of his children. Do you guys believe that? That there is, whether or not you believe in God, there is something that that child can do, that they can add to the earth that wasn't here before them and wouldn't be here without them. And so imagine if we could get a glimpse of the individual plan for each of our children. What if we could know how to enhance their spiritual gifts? What if we could know how to motivate the child to reach his or her potential? What if we could know how to help each child transition from faith to testimony? And she continues, how can we know? We can know by listening. And I love this. This is just somebody else's experience, but I've had this experience so many times. It says, I do a greater amount of good when I listen to my children than when I talk to them. I gradually learned that my children don't want my ready-made, time-proven, wise answers. Sometimes you know, like you're like, okay, listen, this is what you need to do. But they're not going to listen to you, right? To them, being able to ask their questions and to talk about their problems is more important than receiving my answers. And usually when they get through talking, if I have listened long and well enough, they don't really need my answer. They've already found it. And so how do we go about that? So that's
So the first thing that I'll start doing with kids is to look at their purpose or their why. Again, this is not something we need to tell them. This is something we need to help draw out of them, right? Like, what is it that they enjoy? What is it that they are really good at? I'll tell you a time, and I tell the kids sometimes stories. I do try it. This is actually really awkward for me because my go-to is only to speak for like a minute or two before I have somebody else speak. So, but there was a time when my kids were all little, and my youngest, she has severe special needs to the point where, she's 16 now, but she's still in a wheelchair. She doesn't speak. We're in the hospital all the time. She's almost died several times. It's pretty severe. And so because of that, I was feeling, and because just of motherhood, right? I was feeling so overwhelmed. And I got up in the morning and I caught myself. I'd be like wiping down a table. Nobody else ever does anything in this house. I can't understand why, you know, there's that kind of, as I'm sweeping, I was like, oh, these kids, if they could just clean up after themselves at once, you know? And I had a very wise mentor who also happens to be my sister-in-law. I was talking to her about it and she said to me, she said, Julie, you need to think about your why. Why do you have these kids? Why do you care, right? And I started thinking about that and realizing that my attitude was all wrong. So in order to help myself, because I'm not a person who does things one time and can remember them, I came up with a kind of like a motto. And my motto was that I'm so grateful that I get to be these children's mother. And yes, things are hard, but I am so grateful that I get to have this chance to serve them because they're not going to be here that long and I'm not going to have that chance later. And so, because of that, it totally, completely flipped everything on its head. And I'm so grateful that I had that somebody said that to me right when I needed it, because it made the rest of my homeschooling career was so much better after that, because I started thinking about things and being grateful for what I had instead of being annoyed at what I thought should be happening. And so having that type of a purpose will also help your kids. You guys have all heard of victim mentality, right? Okay. Does anybody's kid sometimes have a victim mentality? Mom, you always make me do everything. Sounds a lot like what I was saying, actually, now that I think about it. Mine was a victim mentality as well. So by having a purpose or a why that they can come back to, whether it's a motto, something small, they could have a mission statement that they read every day. They could have whatever it is. And sometimes even having like something that you can say to them, like, hey, remember, you know, whatever that is for them.
Do you have some examples, like specific?
Of a mission statement or of?
For the kids?
Yeah, so my favorite book of examples for that is 7 Habits for Highly Effective Teens. And it has a ton of examples. But also, I just taught a class on this thing, on 7 Habits, this last semester, and the kids did mission statements. Some of them did things like they did their name, and then they put values to each letter of their name. So that just, that were important to them, what they wanted to be, right? It can look like a mantra, or it can look like that, like a poem. Somebody else did, live life. And then like they did a whole bunch of like just little short, you know, things like that. So I hope that, but 7 Habits for Highly Effective Team has a ton of that. And there's so many books out there. If you guys want suggestions, I can give them to you, but there's so many books out there about mission statements and goals and values, and things like that. I have actually, so for the class that I'm teaching for the youth, now that I think about it, we're doing a workshop class.
So it's, and we're going to be doing this very thing. And so if you guys want to pass it around, I might have some extra after the youth. But basically, what I'm having them do, and I'd be happy to send this out to anybody, but I'm having them go through and pick like their 3 to 5 best favorite values, okay? So what things do mean the most to them? What do they want to be known? Like, so if it was at their eulogy and someone was speaking at their funeral, what adjectives do they want to be used to describe them, right? And obviously, we'd like all of these to be used, but which are the most important, like if you had to pick, right? And that's going to be different. And then I have over here, like, what behaviors do you want to have? So this is just a quick thinking about why. And you might want to do something more in-depth if it's, like, your kid, but this is a good place to start. So it says, what do you want to be? What behaviors do you want to have? So pick your top 3. So do you want to be a person who shows up when they say they will? Is that something that's important to you? Or do you want to be somebody that someone can ask for help, that they feel comfortable asking for help? Do you want to be a person that sets boundaries and make sure that you keep the people around you and yourself safe? Do you want to be someone who can make the tough decisions? Do you want to be a leader or a person that someone can come to in times of need? Do you want to be in the background or do you want to be work in the limelight? Do you want to be able to walk others and yourself through emotional difficulties? So again, they're going to pick their ones that resonate the strongest or write their own. But sometimes with younger kids especially, it's nice to have, and like I said, if you guys, I really should have printed out more of these, but if you want a copy of this, you can let me know and I can maybe there's a copy machine here.
Did you say you're passing one of those around?
Yeah, I'll pass it around for people too, and you can take pictures or whatever. But, and then like just what fascinates you? And then if you could change one thing about the world with your actions, what would it be? So would you cure cancer or would you, you know, stop the rainforests from being depleted? And then the next part is not this, but it's basically still learning about themselves, which is how do you best learn? And then it has a bunch of different ideas on that. So if they can learn...
Is that your 7 habits should
affect? Sorry?
Is that a feature in your book?
I actually put that together myself for the workshop. But I can, like I said, I can
see. Can you just give us your email and then we can...
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great idea. I'm like, I don't know how to get this to everybody. So my email is the Maple Scholar. So MapleScholar at Outlook.com. And if you send me an email asking for it, I will go ahead and send you the copy. And that way you can just adjust it or change it based on what you want to do too. It didn't even occur to me that I should print more for this class. Okay. We talked about the importance of listening and listening well. And so these are some of the things that I have found that really help to make sure that people know that you're listening. Some of us have a bored face when we're resting, okay? We look at people, we're listening, but we're like this. And you can't tell that that person is listening. And that can cause major problems for our youth. They need to be able to see in your face and in your actions that you're listening, that you hear them, and that you want to hear what they have to say. And so the first way to do that is to just listen for understanding. If you don't have a resting bored face, then you're probably just fine if you are actually paying attention to what they have to say. Which, honest to goodness, that sounds like such an easy thing, but sometimes it's hard. Sometimes you're tired. Or, you know, like, just... There's a lot of things that can be going on. Or sometimes your ears have already been worn out by everyone at co-op, and now you just want quiet. But if you can turn on your listening, then that hopefully will show in your face. And if it doesn't naturally show in your face, if you know that about yourself, then make sure that you are, then maybe you can look up the tricks for, there's tips and tricks for active listening. But it's basically like just making eye contact and nodding occasionally and things like that, right?
I think most of us know those. Then asking questions to clarify. There's a very broad range of youth out there. And so sometimes you'll have some over here who don't, like they're gonna talk. And then you have some over here that are gonna, you're gonna ask them like an open-ended question, right? You're gonna ask them, so what did you do this weekend? Nothing. So how are you, you know, whatever. And you're gonna get these single word answers, right? And so one of the things that, and I actually do have a quick activity that we're going to do later about how to ask questions or make comments that help to bring that out of them, right? And to find the gems. Because every student that you work with, whether they have been beat down to the point that they don't recognize it themselves, they want to be recognized as smart. They want to be smart. They want to be good. They want to be, you know, everybody wants that. And some of them won't admit it to you because they don't feel like they can. But they all want that. And so if you can find those gems of thought that they have, pull them out and recognize them for what they are and say, look, this is a beautiful thought you just had. I love that thought. Let's go deeper. Then that gives them, I've seen kids go from never raising their hands in class to being able to be confident enough to say, and then they'll say like several sentences, which to me, I mean, it's a pretty big win. So you want to make sure those questions are open-ended, or sometimes again, the kid that's not going to talk, they're not going to answer that open-ended question, but sometimes if you give them a choice, they will. And we'll go into more detail. And I guess we already talked about active listening. Be actually interested. If you're faking it, they're going to be able to tell. And then this is something that's very difficult for most of us. it's just not, that's something I've had to work on in my life, if I'm being honest, is to just be quiet. And you can tell I'm a talker. But to just, like, I start to get nervous when I'm working with youth if I can tell that I've talked for more than a minute or two. And I'll immediately reach for a question or something that I can do to get somebody else to talk. Because you will lose them. And you can tell because their eyes go. in fact, I kind of wanted to ask you guys really fast, have you ever been having a conversation with somebody and then literally see the light go out of their eyes and you can tell they're not listening anymore? Right? Okay, I don't know. I have. And after that happens, how badly do you want to continue that conversation? Right? And it sometimes can get to the point, like, I know when I was a youth and I was a little bit less confident in myself and that happened, I didn't really want to talk to anybody for the rest of the day. Because I was like, I'm just not interested. And nobody wants that. And that's why it's so important that as much as we might want to be thinking about the bill that we have to pay or the dinner that has to be made or the million other things on our plate, that this listening has to, you have to stay, there it is. You have to actually be interested. Because they will see it. Okay. So these are just some examples, things that I use. You have to use what's going to work and come from your heart and be authentic. But so if it really is an amazing thought, I literally will say, I'll be like, oh my gosh, Julie, that was awesome. I just have to think about that for a second. Right? And how does that...
Actually, you've done that to me in, like, our personal conversations, and it's like, wait, Julie is, like, taking something I have to say? Okay, that must have been, I should probably write down what I just said, because I don't remember what I just
said. You have said some amazing things, so. but when they say amazing things, let them know, wow, that was, like, whatever, but,
And then sometimes they say things that you don't necessarily agree with. And so when I say, I have to say this out loud so you can understand how it sounds. It's like, okay, that was a really interesting thought. Do you mean that this is this what you mean? Or did you mean this by it? Because I'm not quite sure. Again, what that's going to do is that will help them to feel like your own, well, first of all, it pushes them, right? Makes them think, what did I mean? I swear to you, there are kids who say things that I'm pretty sure they did just said it to just get out of saying something else, right? And I'll say, oh, that's actually interesting. Were you talking about this or this? And they'll always pick the more interesting thing. And they'll go with, and they're like, yeah, that's what I meant. I really like that idea because, that's thought provoking. What made you think about that? Again, that can pull more out of them, right? So if they're the type of person, especially who's not talking a lot. So what I understand from what you said is, this. Is that right? Or did you mean something else by that? That is such a cool way of looking at it. And then sometimes this is cool if you can get this to work. If you can get them to tell you stories from their life. Personal experiences, things like that. That's where their learning comes from. And amazingly enough, what I have found is that our kids, when they're at this age, they learn more from what comes out of their mouths than what comes out of yours. So they will teach themselves, and a lot of times it'll be stuff that you've tried like 50 million times to teach them. Yes.
Can I just add
to
that?
No, yes, please do.
So Reverend Wilcox, he shared an example of that, and he was just saying that they were like designing curriculum for the NSYs, and he said that one thing that was really important that they were learning is that they would always give the children or the team like a certain amount of time to study the scriptures, and then they would go in knowing that afterwards they would have to share something that they learned. And he said that's what we need to do, is we need to draw from the inside out and give our children, and they're doing that in Sunday school and in all different, you know, areas in the church we can see that they're doing that, but give them a chance where they can share, just like you said, they learn more when they share from themselves than from. He said he called it like inside teaching out rather than us trying to teach into them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've seen it. In fact, I'll share with you later. I have it on here. An email that my missionary son sent me. And it's interesting. It's all the stuff that I've been trying to teach him that now he's teaching us. So it's lovely. But, okay. So here's what we're going to do really fast because we're about halfway through and I'm sure everybody needs to stand up. Do you guys all have pens? If anybody doesn't, I have a pen. So, and actually, I think I'm not going to leave them all back here. So I have these papers here. I'll just grab them really fast. And I'll leave this one back here. I'll give one per, you guys can kind of meet in the middle and try and do one per group. But these are just going to be, like, student reactions, okay? So your child, I'm going to, if you could, yeah, you're going to have to, maybe you two could come back here with this group. So these are student reactions to this paragraph. So I'm going to read the paragraph, and then I want everyone to just write. And so write something, pass it on. We'll see how far it can go before we have to stop, but we'll pass them through. Write your idea of what you could say, comment or a question that could help to spark their thought or to encourage that thought in any way, okay? So here's the quote is from Dune, and it says, I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass over me and through me. And when it has gone, forth, I will turn the inner eye to see its path. Where the fear has gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain. Okay. So you talk to the kids, you ask them what do they think about that? And these are their answers. So how do you draw more or how do you encourage? Go ahead, just write whatever you think, and we can kind of, you guys can all write at the same time. Just put it in the middle, just start. Sorry.
Oh,
Yeah, so you just keep adding, like, just come up with your own idea. What else could you say? Mm-hmm. Just different, a question or a clarifying or a...
something that would help.
Okay. Just finish up what you're writing and then we'll have a conversation about it. Okay, so the first comment that we had is fear isn't good. Okay, that's what they said. You read them this paragraph and they say fear isn't good. What would you...
That's ours.
Go ahead. What types of things would you say?
What would our lives be like if we never did anything we feared?
Okay.
What purpose does fear play in our lives? That one's really deep. That could go...
Right?
When were you fearful and what did you do? How did you overcome it? Ask personal experiences from their lives. What was the end result? What was their growth? Give examples. Like, if a baby never learned to walk, obviously they would never walk. What's safe or not safe? What choices do they make? That one I didn't get.
How does fear help us as a tool to determine what's safe and not safe?
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, those are all awesome questions about fear, for sure. I think... And I like that if you can, so my only thing would be, and maybe I just missed something, that you connect it to their question more. Like, if there's a way to say, that is, okay, so what is bad about fear? Like, just kind of like to add on to that. I do like your questions. I think that they're excellent questions. And more when I read them, when I listen to them, I'm like, ooh, I want to have a book discussion with you guys. I wonder, the thing that I loved that you were giving them a chance to give their own personal experiences. That was all really good. Does anybody have any other thoughts on that?
I have one more.
Yes.
Why, when you ask what is bad about fear, then you can ask why do you feel that way, which will lead to
I like it. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Those are all really good. Okay, what about, I think that mind, that fear is a mind killer. We can't think with fear.
Okay. Is this a true principle? That fear is a mind killer, that we can't think with fear.
Yeah.
Is that true, yes or no? Or, you know, a whole discussion from there.
Mm-hmm.
Another one, how can I or you or we, whatever one you want to use, acknowledge the fear and then let it go? Because that was one of the statements in there.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
How do you do that? And is there an example when fear tried to kill something in you?
Ooh, yeah, I like that one. That's good.
What are some of your fears? Can you think of a time you overcame a fear? How did that feel? Does that fear come from an external experience?
Good stuff. Awesome. Okay, our next one is sometimes fear doesn't go past.
Oh, we wrote, could you explain what that means? Interpret what that means? Because we're confused.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of why I wrote that, is to be so good.
You have to... I wrote, does that mean everyone has to experience fear? Is it something that goes past all of us? You know, or what does go past me?
Gotcha. I like that. I like what does, I think that when you have a confusing, so those are all very good questions for that, because you want to clarify. So if they say something that's confusing, which often happens, you definitely want to clarify. The only thing that I would add to it is, just kind of that at the beginning. Huh. Just to kind of be, so that, to show that you're thinking and that you're interacting. Okay, well, what do you, I want to know exactly what you mean by that. I think I might know. Because you don't want them to think, because if you just say, what do you mean by that? Sometimes they can take that as, I'm not very good. I don't even know, right? They get defensive. But all of those are awesome questions to continue and to clarify. Because we definitely need to, because showing that you want to know what they mean does show interest. Being afraid is normal. Who has that one?
With, that's really interesting. Do you feel like everyone is afraid all the time, or is it more that we're just everyone is afraid at some point?
So stop just for a second. I love how you started with that's really interesting, because it changes the tone of the entire everything after it. You can keep going.
Yeah, and I love that because it kind of opens it up like, huh?
Yeah.
That's really interesting. And then what made you feel like being afraid is normal? Like what? Has happened in your life, what experience have you gone through that makes you feel like that is normal?
Mm-hmm.
What do you do when you're afraid, and what tools do you have when you are afraid that can help you work through that? And that's it.
Awesome, thank you. Okay, who has the last one? It says, if you have strong faith, then you can let go of fear. You can trust that when you do, you won't fall because God won't let you. Who has that one? Did I not have that one out? Okay, so we'll continue on then. Did I get to everybody's paper? That's all that I wanted to do, is make sure that everybody had a chance to share. Did everybody have a chance to share then? Okay. Okay, so we've talked a lot, and it actually makes sense that we're talking most of the time about listening, since that is the most important part of it. And that's part of, like, even when you get to, the paper that I passed out is the first part, but if you're going to make a plan, if you are going to be a shadow mentor, then what you're doing is you're giving ownership to your students, okay? They're the ones who are planning what they're doing. They're the ones. Now, does that mean that there's no scaffolding in place? Absolutely not. There has to be a scaffolding. Just like in the placenta, you're not taking over their body. You're not saying as they get older, they need more and more autonomy, but they still need you. And this is something, like, a lot of people think that when their kids hit 11, 12, 13, 14 years old, that they should be able to say, okay, here you go, here's your homework, now you go do it. And that's exactly backwards. Because I'm not the one who should decide what they're going to do, because I'm not them and I don't know how they're going to learn best. So they should be writing out what they're going to do. And then there needs to be support. And how much support depends on the kid, right? Some of my kids buy, I don't know, it's probably, I want to say 15 or 16, at least for my kids, before they could really kind of take it and run with it on their own. Is everybody, is that about consensus-wise? I don't know. It depends on the kid. Like, but even my kid who was super, super intelligent, the one who's at law school right now, he still needed me to meet with him and do a meeting with him every morning. He needed me to kind of sit with him and talk through stuff. Yes.
Something that's really helped me, because I agree. I love those sit-down meetings, but I feel like a lot of times I just need like a check-in to kind of see like where they're at. And we started a verbiage when they were really little, and I would just ask them, do you need me to hug? Do you need me to hear you? Or do you need me to help you? And it seems so simple, but it, even now with my husband, I'll even do it. It's like love and logic-ing him. Of like, where am I at? Like, where do you need me? Because I'm a fix-it, and I'm a healer, and I just want to like fix everything. Yeah. And a lot of times they're like, just shh. Right? Like, just be quiet and hold me, or let me tell you what I need to do. And so I think that even as they're older, that really helps, like, for a check-in on a quick.
I love that. Yes, please do, because we're all going to write that down.
Either hug, hear, or help.
So do you need me to hug you? Do you need me to hear you? Or do you need me to help you? I love that. And you can come up with your own for your own family, but I love that you're asking them, you're listening to what they need, because they know what they need, right?
Accountability to figure out what they need, because I think sometimes they just don't know, and they're just spinning circles. And when I can ask that and even listen for a minute first, and then ask it, then it gives them that opportunity to be accountable.
Absolutely, I love that. And I, yes, go ahead. Yeah,
I was thinking too about how I was like this as a teenager, and I'm seeing it now in my daughter, is that she doesn't want so much help from me, mom, specifically. But so when she asks for help, maybe she's asking for resources or direction. She doesn't want me to solve the problem for her. So, for instance, I gave my daughter a project. You need to do a research project. You need to be able to have, like, three different ways that you're presenting your information, visual, audio, demonstration, whatever you want. So she picked out her topic, but I came in and I tried to say, like, oh, can I check up on, like, can I see your progress and what are you doing? She was making this slideshow and she was just filling each slide with tons of text. Yeah. And I said, well, are you giving a speech? Because that's not really going to be the most effective way to give a speech is with a slideshow full of text. And she's like, no, this is just how I'm taking my notes. But then I noticed later that she had been, Googling, you know, Google comes up with like the recent searches, right? It was like, how to give a good presentation, how to make a good slideshow. But because she had been given that resource of being able, you can Google the things that you need for your research project. She didn't want me to tell her how to do it, but I had given her that tool and the trust. Okay, you're going to make something great.
Absolutely. And I love that because it actually, that's funny. It goes right along with the next thing that we're going to talk about, which is connect to inspiration. So you don't have to be the teacher of everything. You don't have to be the inspiration for everything. You don't have to be everything and everything to your children, which is, I think, why so many people are like, oh, I could never homeschool through high school, because they figure that you have to know everything. And I can tell you right now that my son outstripped me probably in sophomore year. I was like, and just, here you go. Here, we'll help you find some more stuff. But again, what you said there, listen to what they're saying they want, right? It's already been said today. So I'll just reinforce it. Ask if they would like, don't just suggest. This actually was a game changer for me too. If you start suggesting, if you start, hey, would you like some help? Or here, could I give you this book? Or could I help you with this? Most kids, not all, but most kids are going to shut down at that. And they're going to be like, no, I've got this. I'm older. I can do this, right? But if you ask, if you say, hey, this is the thing that we've decided to do. You need to learn how to write a research paper or whatever. And is there something, would you like any books on that? Or would you like any, you know, help finding videos or anything like that? Is there something you'd like help with? Usually, I found they'll say, yeah, actually, I don't know where to start. Could you help me find something that could help me walk it through? You can ask if they would like to help to find someone else that could help them. So this is a different, so connecting them to other mentors. And that's part of why I adore our homeschool co-op, is that we're able to have other people right? So even though I don't do wood burning well, Julie does. And so if my kid wants to do that, I can be like, hey, Julie, how would you like? Right? So you can find someone, again, ask them first if they would like to help find someone, and then be an example by following through. Sometimes, it can be hard to follow through if you're making, so make sure you don't overpromise what you can help them with. So this was kind of fun. This is my son. He was a senior last year, and obviously we didn't do a lot of read alouds at that point. He was reading most of his own books, right? But he loves to have his hair played with. And so it's like his favorite thing. And I really, really, really wanted him to read like Atomic Habits with me. And so I was like, hey, I'll play with your hair and we can read this book together first thing in the morning. So that's what we did. And, honestly, sometimes he fell asleep. I'm like, I didn't know how much he got out of it. But just this Monday, he actually, he sent this email and I just think it was just beautiful to me as a mom. He said, I invite you to, he's so funny too. He's kind of very philosophy minded in his emails, but not in real life. So it's kind of, anyways, he goes, I invite you to make your life a conscious choice. Beginning each day, you have choices to make. Will I read another one of Elder Lopez's boring philosophy emails? Is it worth it to put on pants today? What kind of example do I want to set to my ancestors and descendants about faith and purpose in life and the pride that they could so easily succumb to? Those who keep a daily habit of any kind know some small part of what O.W. Holmes meant when he said, I find the great thing in this world is not so much where we stand, but in the direction we are moving. For people who are like me and struggle with daily habits, I would recommend stacking the habits you have. Huh, I wonder where he learned that. Your friend who excitedly chose to put on pants today, Elder Lopez. So there was, I cut it down, but that's basically what he said. And it was just, that was a connection to inspiration. Did I teach him to stack habits? No. But I introduced him to the book that inspired him to be able to do that. So that's a lot of our job, is just getting them the inspiration, helping them find it. Because there's so much in this world that's not inspiring. And this is what we're going to talk about next. How to encourage them when struggles happen. Because they will. They absolutely will. If your kid tells you that they're not struggling and everything's going perfect, they are probably lying. So you need to go deeper at that point. So when the weekly, when we have these conversations, I try to be very careful not to push a perfectionist mindset, right? So it's easy. And I think a lot of people talk about how it's easy to be hard on yourself when you don't do things right. And it is. But I almost think it's just as easy to be hard on your kids. To be like, oh, how many times have I told you? Right? Have you ever heard that coming out of your mouth? If you could just. So in this situation, this is what I like about mentor meetings. And I would highly, highly recommend that if you don't have mentor meetings with your children, that you start it. And it can be weekly, it could be daily, it could be monthly, depending on what they need. But part of the great thing about mentor meetings is they are a safe place for them to actually admit to you that they're struggling instead of you just finding out and then getting upset, right? They give the child an opportunity to talk things over and to work things out. So when they come to the meetings, I'll be like, so one of our goals was, remember, these are the goals. This is the mission that you have. How are you doing on this goal? And if they say to me, yeah, didn't do that one at all this week, I'll ask for clarification. So help me. Tell me what happened, right? No judgment. Just tell me what happened. And they'll usually walk you through. This is only if necessary. There are some kids that are very, very sensitive. If you have a sensitive child, do not ask them anything like this. This is for those kids that are like, whatever. Guess I didn't meet my goal this week. You know, then you might need to talk a little bit about why did they have this goal and re-looking at it again. Let's look at it and see if there's a different way. And although you could, with a sensitive child, you could approach it this way. You could say, hey, you know, is there another way that you could, if this is the actual goal, is there another way that you could reach it that might be better, right? Like, and this is why. Or is this your why? Maybe the goal is not quite on track. Like, maybe your why is here and your goal could be here, but it could also be this way. And then this is again with the listening. Ask them. Okay, so if that didn't work that time, do you have any ideas? What do you think you're going to try this week? If it's, you know, as long as they have that importance to it, well, how are you going to try this week to do it? And some of them, again, will have ideas. And they'll be like, okay, well, you know, I think I'm going to try the 5-4-3-2-1 blast off thing that we talked about in this other thing. I don't know if you guys heard about that, but sometimes they'll be like, I just need to do it. And that's what my, okay, if you just need to do it, then do 5-4-3-2-1 and then just do it. So that way it stops your brain from coming up with excuses right before you're going to do it. And if they don't know, which I would say happens 50, 60% of the time, they'll sit there in quiet. And you'll ask them, so what do you think you could do? And they'll just sit there and give them a good minute, 2 minutes of time. Just sit there with them and kind of get a thoughtful look on your face too, and actually use that time, because this is the next step, is to ask if you can share some ideas. So that time that they're thinking, you can use to be thinking as well. What things can I, instead of talking out loud, which was what a lot of us do, just be thinking, what things could I do that could possibly help? Or what things have I read that might be able to help them? Or are there books that I could turn to them to? Or is there an idea that I've watched in a TED talk, or, you know, whatever it may be. And then after the 1 or 2 minutes, I just gently ask, would you like to know what some other people, would you like some ideas that other people have tried? And they'll usually go, yeah, because they're relieved. And so then I'll give them a couple of ideas, at least 2, up to 5, but probably not more than 4 or 5, and then let them pick what they're going to do. And then just make sure to celebrate even the small victories with them, because it's so important that they feel that joy that comes from reaching their goals and doing the things that they've said they're going to do and all of that. Does anybody have any questions or thoughts? I think we're just going to stop there. Yes?
This is a whole new concept.
Okay.
So do you, like, write down what the goals are for each of your kids in, like,
yes,
a notebook? And then you, like, write down, like, their
schedule? I do it on Excel, but same idea. I have goals, and then I have their routines or their schedule, whatever they want to do, and then I have, like, what they're doing in each subject, and they decide. So I sit down and say, okay, what do you want to do for math this year? What are your what's your why behind your math? And some of them want to learn math so that they can not look stupid in front of other people, and that's all they want to do. And others might want to go into engineering, and others might say, you know, because I've talked to them about how math, this is one of my favorite aha moments here, I'll share it with you. Math is like weightlifting. You don't lift weights just so that you can get, because you want the weight that's down here up here. There are machines that can do that, right? Just like there are calculators that could do math. That's not the purpose behind math. Math is to grow your brain muscles, because brain cells and muscle cells are very, very similar in the way they work. If you use them, they grow. If you don't, you lose them. And so that's, you know, some of them are just like, I just want to weightlift, Mom. Just okay, that's fine. We'll just do some weightlifting. Yes?
I had a question about that. So if you ask your kid, what's your why, say, for math, mm-hmm, and you get like a, well, because you're forcing me to do it. Mm-hmm. Or, I'm only doing it because I have to. What do you do with those sorts of responses?
I'd be like, okay, so why, let's talk about why it might be important. And, like, let's talk, we just talk through it. But for me, with that one, I would say, okay, well, what is it that you want to do in your life? And then I would tie math into, hey, well, if you're going to be a kindergarten teacher, then you're probably going to need to know, you're probably going to need to know how to have a mortgage, and you're probably going to, you know, so there's the basic things, but then in addition to that, I always bring up, with math, I always bring up the weightlifting. Because it's true. And the more logic that you can learn, and the more math and different things like that you can learn, the better off your brain is. So sometimes I'll just say, look, it's just like we want you to eat healthy food.
And then if you're trying to have, helping them find what they want to do in life,
mm-hmm,
if you've got that, like, obstinate teen that's like, well, nothing, or I don't know, or I don't care,
that's
stuff like that.
That's okay then. We just are going to try and get you as healthy as we can, so that when you're there, you have choices.
Okay, that's great. I like that.
Because you don't have to know everything now. I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. Yes.
And how do you schedule these meetings? Is it like the same time?
Yes, same time, same place.
Like beginning of the day is best? Or
mm-hmm. That's what I found. But some people might do, I mean, you can do it whenever. For the short ones that I did daily, I would do just like, hey, we would do a bigger one. Like at the very beginning of the semester, we do one that's like 2 hours. And then weekly, we do like
15, 20 minutes, and then daily, like a 5-minute, hey, what is your plan today? Just so they could just kind of show it to me, and we could make sure that we're all on the same page. And they could, one of the things I didn't get to is like time blocking. So they come up with their own schedule, but then there's certain times that I'm not allowed to interrupt them if they're still on task. If they're not on task, then they get to have a chore or whatever, right? But as long as they stay on task. So, yes?
And one thing I found is beginning of the day is different for different children. And some, that's noon or 1 o'clock. That's the beginning of the day. And for others, they are up at 6 or 7. So beginning of the day starts at 8, even though I don't want the day to start at 8.
It also depends on your family culture, right? So our family culture is we had to get up and do chores. And so it didn't matter if you wanted to get up, you still got up because it was chores. So, but then they might start doing their, yeah, the order they do things and all that stuff. It definitely be different. All right. Thank you guys so much for being so kind.